I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Don Haskins was the young Texas Western coach with a simple mission. He wanted to win. Adolph Rupp was a 64-year-old Kentucky legend, a man of unreconstructed racial politics who also wanted to win. What set them apart? It's not too much to say that the young man saw the world as it could be. The older man saw the world as it was and as he wanted it to stay. And on that distant evening of Saturday, March 19th, 1966, in the NCAA National Championship basketball game in College Park, Maryland, vision defeated stasis. Possibility defeated the past. Opportunity defeated the existing order. The world of basketball would never be the same, and neither would America itself. 41 years later, the entire 1966 Texas Western team was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
We're so glad when we look at today's game and we see the diversity in today's game. It does our hearts good. But we want you to understand one thing. It's a commitment that you have to make to give back to that game. It's not about the money. It's not about the material things. Those are highly overrated. It's about giving back things that was given to you. We thank you again for this great honor. We will always cherish this.
I'm Doc Rivers, and this is It Was Said Sports, the championship that changed everything. Texas Western's 1966 NCAA title.
My own personal feeling was maybe this could be a gigantic step forward toward racial harmony.
I never got over walking in that gym and knowing what happened in it changed the face of college basketball and probably all sports.
The Texas Western University versus Kentucky NCAA final in 1966 is one of those stories that doesn't get enough attention. Sure, sports folks like me know it, and there was a movie about it, Glory Road, and the occasional documentary or anniversary essay in a place like Sports Illustrated. In the history of the 1960s, however, what happened at Cove Fieldhouse at the University of Maryland doesn't get noted amid images from the March on Washington, George Wallace's stand in the schoolhouse door in Tuscaloosa, or Bloody Sunday at the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma. But it should. Politics and culture are intimately intertwined, and sports in America are a vital force within the broader culture.
These things to me are, you know, one of the turns that the culture has taken away from history is frightening.
His legendary sports journalist and commentator, Michael Wilbon.
You shouldn't have to be 60 years old like we are to remember these things and treasure them and value them for what they were. But sadly, we have to keep these things alive with these kinds of discussions or they will die on the vine.
Jackie Robinson's pioneering career with the Brooklyn Dodgers was part of the post-World War II shift in attitudes about race and accomplishment. Billie Jean King's high-profile victory over Bobby Riggs gave the women's movement a popular win. Muhammad Ali's career in the ring and dramatic acts of protest outside it reflected a changing nation and a changing world. You probably haven't heard of Don Haskins, or of Bobby Joe Hill, or of Ornstein Artis, or of Dave Latin, or of Willie Cager, or of Neville Shedd, or of Harry Flournoy, or of Willie Worsley, or of Jerry Armstrong. But you should, because they, the 1966 Texas Western Miners, helped make history. The 1966 Texas Western team became the first NCAA team to win a title with five black starting players, beating an all-white team, Kentucky. And a lot of history was being made as the 1965-66 basketball season began. It was a thrilling and tumultuous time in America. We were in the midst of a Cold War. The Berlin Wall had gone up. The Cuban Missile Crisis had nearly led to a global Armageddon. Martin Luther King Jr. and John Lewis were leading a peaceful, nonviolent movement for civil rights against virulent white supremacy. America was racing the Soviet Union into space.
President Kennedy has been shot in Dallas, Texas. He was shot while he was touring.
President Kennedy was murdered in Dallas in November 1963. His successor, Lyndon B. Johnson, pressed the Congress to pass civil rights legislation. And after Alabama lawmen attacked peaceful protesters at Selma, LBJ sought landmark voting rights legislation. He signed that bill not long before the 1965-66 season began, which is where Don Haskins, who was known as the Bear, enters the story. Born in Enid, Oklahoma in 1930, he played at Oklahoma A&M, reaching the NCAA semifinals. Haskins had been hired by Texas Western, a D1 school in El Paso, in 1961, and set about building a team. He wanted the best, and the best just happened to be mostly black players.
I do remember that in the build-up to the game, it was in March of 66, Texas Western had played essentially the same five players all season long, and they were a seven-man rotation, essentially.
Here's longtime college sportscaster Vern Lundquist.
So I know media had taken acknowledgement of the fact, the historical fact, that this would be a team with five black players for the first time in the history of the NCAA. We all learned about that on the path to the championship game. The names come flooding back for Texas Western. Big Daddy David Latin, Neville Shedd. They had two guards, one of whom was listed at 5'10", Bobby Joe Hill. The other, the unforgettable 5'6" guard, Willie Worsley. And there was another Willie on the team, Willie Cager. And Kentucky, among other people, had Pat Riley as a starting guard, Louis Dampier, who played in the old ABA, the Kentucky Colonels.
The Miners were an integrated team in an age shadowed by segregation. It wasn't all black or all white. It was just all good. Harry Flournoy, a leading rebounder for the Miners, was team captain of the historic 1966 team.
We played the game because it was an escape for us. It was an escape from the reality of the times when people would tell you what you couldn't do. People would tell you that you can't put five black players out on the floor at the same time. They would ask the question, why? Because they're black. We had to break that. We proved that a farce, a fallacy.
The season had been fantastic. The Miners went 23-1, losing only to Seattle in the last game of the regular season. In the final against Kentucky, Texas Western prevailed 72-65. It was shocking. Kentucky, which included Pat Riley, had been expected to triumph, especially after defeating Duke in the semifinal.
And some of them knew what was going on, and some of them didn't. not everybody noticed when they sat in their seat that UTEP, Texas Western at the time, had five black players on the floor. And so not everybody knew it. Not everybody noticed that juxtaposed, Kentucky's team was all white. Of course, there was no black player in the SEC yet. When Texas Western played Kentucky.
In Sports Illustrated, Frank DeFord wrote, "No minor player had made an all-district team, much less in All-America. But the team just kept on winning and finally met Kentucky in the finals. And instead of Adolph Rupp winning his fifth national title, Don Haskins won his first. I'm just a young punk," Haskins said. "It was a thrill playing against Mr. Rupp, let alone beating him."
I sat in his office once. I was supposed to be covering a Sun Bowl, and Don Haskins was walking around. And I said, "Coach, can I just talk to you for a while?" I went in his office and I said, "Just no more than 20 minutes. And I was there like 3 hours. And the memories he had of it, the emotion it welled up in him, I don't think he knew necessarily that he was going to start those players, and it had nothing to do with race who he started. Back then, nobody was going nine deep. People put five guys on the floor, and sometimes they played the whole 40 minutes. But it seemed like not everybody knew.
The Haskins strategy was straightforward. As he recalled, "I was simply playing the best players I had. It was what I had done all year." The New York Times agreed. In an analysis published on Monday after the Saturday game, the writer Gordon Smith never mentioned race. "The game had been decided," Smith wrote, "because Texas Western played much better basketball than Kentucky to upset the Wildcats in the finale, the first major sports title ever achieved by the El Paso College, once known as the Texas School of Mines." But the haters sure mentioned race. As Haskins recalled, there were bags and bags of nasty, racist, ignorant letters. "We were just this little old school in dusty West Texas, and no one had ever heard of us. And now people all over the country hated us because we had black student athletes."
My own personal feeling was maybe this could be a gigantic step forward toward racial harmony. I think so many white people thought of the result of that encounter as an anomaly, and that it would naturally be corrected in the coming years to come. That didn't work out for the white people who didn't appreciate the contribution of Texas Western to the history of our country, not just the history of basketball or college sports. I was 25, 2.5 years into my first job, and I remember how important it was, especially to the African-American community. It was a huge step and a huge accomplishment.
Newsday alluded to the fact of the matter, writing, "All of the first seven are Negroes. That shouldn't be significant one way or the other, except that many people make it noteworthy with snickers about the ethnic makeup of the team." Kentucky coach Adolph Rupp reportedly said, "TWC, what's that stand for? Two white coaches?" "No, Coach Rupp, it didn't stand for that. It stood for Texas Western College." And in 1966, Texas Western College stood for excellence on the court. After all, they beat you, the great Rupp of Kentucky, for the national championship. But Texas Western stood for something else too. It stood for the future.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got
got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I'm Lauren Sherman, the writer behind Puck's Fashion and Beauty Memo line sheet. And I'd like to welcome you to my new show, Fashion People. On every episode of Fashion People, I'll be talking to insiders about the stuff we're all whispering between the press releases, from M&A rumors to celebrity stylist dish to the future of legacy media. Be sure to follow and listen to Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I live 8 miles away from College Park, specifically what was then called Cole Fieldhouse, which is where the game was played. And I walked in there in 1980 for the first time when I was covering a Maryland game, Maryland basketball game. And so it's 14 years later at the time, and I got the chills because I had grown up not remembering the game itself as much as the event and what it meant. I mean, there was nobody who looked like them who had ever stepped on that floor when that game was being played in 1966, March of 1966. And so it's just staggering. And I covered dozens of games there for the Washington Post. And I never got over it. I never got over walking in that gym and knowing what happened in it changed the face of college basketball and probably all sports.
And 41 years later, after his momentous victory, the entire team was inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, enshrining the 1966 Texas Western Miners as a pivotal force in basketball history and American history. Co-captain Harry Flournoy took to the podium and spoke on behalf of his Texas Western teammates.
In 1966, we had 8 black players, 4 white players, and 1 Hispanic player. And our only purpose was to be the best team in the country. We did not have a social agenda at that time. We were only thinking about winning the championship. We thought we had the best team in the country.
Flournoy was recruited from the state of Indiana to Texas Western by Coach Haskins. In interviews, he said he was greeted into the city of El Paso and into the college community with warmth.
I was treated real, real well here when I got here. You know, I was a pretty unknown person. I wasn't really highly recruited, and the people treated me real well here.
But he was still facing the realities of the time, often experiencing racism on the road while traveling with the team. And he knew right away how impactful he and his teammates could become.
We were together, not only as a team, but we were like brothers. And like I said, we didn't have a social agenda, but God had a hand in that. And he chose us to open doors. He chose us to open the door to all people, not just African Americans, but to all people who were oppressed, all people who were having doors slammed in their face because of race or gender, or any other reason. He chose us.
There was an old saying about how integrated teams played at mid-century. 2 at home, 3 on the road, 4 if we're behind. That was changing, as Jerry Brewer of the Washington Post wrote in 2016. The memory of Texas Western, now the University of Texas at El Paso, endures. It's a Disney movie, literally, about meritocracy. The lasting significance isn't a matter of the Miners paving a new path for black college basketball players. That had already been done. When Bill Russell and Casey Jones led San Francisco to back-to-back titles in 1955 and 1956, it was more of a trailblazing moment. In 1962 and 1963, Cincinnati and Loyola of Chicago won championships while starting four black players in the title game. What Texas Western did was put an emphatic end to any lingering doubt about the worth of diversity in the sport, especially in the slow-changing South, where Adolph Rupp's storied Kentucky team illuminated a lack of forward thinking in the region. That was Brewer's verdict, and it rings true. One of the great things about the Texas Western story is that it was organic. Haskins wanted to win, and he found a way to do it with the best players he could muster. And they happened to be young black men. Haskins wasn't trying to be Martin Luther King Jr. He was trying to be a great coach.
Coach Haskins and Coach Iba, they were dedicated and they worked hard. They worked us to make us a team, because you can't just put talented people out and think you're going to win games. It takes dedication, it takes discipline, and it takes direction. And he gave that to us.
And there's something of a lesson in all of this. Progress can come when you're not thinking about progress as such. When you're just doing your job, whether as a coach, a player, or as a citizen.
We want you to understand this also. All things are possible. You only have to believe.
Thank you for listening to It Was Said Sports, a documentary podcast from Shining City Audio, a C13 Originals and John Meacham Studio. Executive produced and created by John Meacham and Chris Corcoran. Narrated by me, Doc Rivers. Written by John Meacham. Directed by Lori Lockridge. Production led by Paige Heimsum. Edited and mastered by Chris Basil. Guest booking and coordination by Kelly Rafferty. Additional production support by Bill Schultz, Sean Cherry, Bob Talbador, Ian Mont, and Rich Cook. Creative consultation by Nikki Kovac and David Weisbord. Cover art and graphic designs by Kurt Courtney. Marketing and publicity by Brian Swarth, Moira Corin, Josephina Francis, Lauren Schwartz, and Hillary Schuff. Our theme song is I Can Almost See You by Hammock.
I mean, it was everything. It was the center of the cultural universe. It really was, and I am not overstating that.
MTV started as an all-music video cable TV channel, and it became something much bigger. It was the global youth culture brand for decades. At the beginning, it was like a cultural rocket ship. Now, things are a little different. My name's Dave Holmes, and because I used to work there, pretty often people ask me, what happened? And what I learned isn't just the story of the greatest TV channel of all time. It's the story of pop culture before it got atomized by algorithm-driven entertainment. Join me and a whole bunch of fascinating people whose lives intersected with MTV as we try to answer the question, if video killed the radio star, who killed the video star? Follow and listen to Who Killed the Video Star? The Story of MTV, an Odyssey original. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.